Thank you for your presence this evening. Thank you for your interest in spiritual things. It's so good to see Glendal and Rowena. We see them quite a little bit on our Tuesday morning and Tuesday evening Zoom studies. Glendal and Rowena both are so encouraging. Appreciate their work in the kingdom and their friendship and their presence here as we assemble and worship together. I've asked you to read from the Old Testament book of Ezekiel, chapter 6 and 7. The book of Ezekiel, I think, has been perhaps one of the many neglected books of the Bible when it comes to our study. I might raise the question, just how often do you find yourself reading from the book of Ezekiel? And, or perhaps how long has it been since you've read anything from Ezekiel? Often people read the first chapter of the book of Ezekiel and think, well, it's just so difficult, I'll stop right here, and they don't go any farther. Others pursue a bit further and come up with all kinds of speculative theories. For example, the Mormons have used Ezekiel 37 to talk about Book of Mormon in conjunction with the Bible. And others have searched the book of Ezekiel to try to find out something about extraterrestrial beings that supposedly have come from God, and premillennialists have seized upon certain portions of the book of Ezekiel to set forward speculative theories about what's going to happen at the second coming of Christ. And we sometimes just don't study the book like we should. Now, our focus is not going to be this evening on the entirety of the book, but I did ask you to read two chapters, chapter 6 and chapter 7, because Ezekiel, this Old Testament prophet, was one of the young men that was taken into captivity by the Babylonians. Now, we sometimes think of Ezekiel and Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as being young captives in the Babylonian kingdom after the city of Jerusalem fell. And that's correct. There was, however, a difference between Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Ezekiel. Ezekiel was one of the commoners. As you recall, Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had positions of prominence among the captives and were given some authority. But we know that Ezekiel was one of the common fellows that had been taken captive at a very young age, and God asked him to prophesy some things very specifically about the city of Jerusalem specifically, but about the kingdom of Judah generally, about their fall and the captivity that they were enduring. Now, having said that, I want to call your attention to Ezekiel chapter 2. Ezekiel chapter 2, as we introduce the things that we want to talk about, or I want to talk with you about in our study this evening. Now, after God charges Ezekiel to speak these things, he said in verse 8 of Ezekiel 2, "But thou, son of man, hear what I say unto thee. Be not thou rebellious like that rebellious house. Open thy mouth and eat that which I give thee." In other words, to consume it. Consume what I have told you. He said, "And when I looked, behold, a hand was put forth unto me, and lo, a roll of the book was therein. And he spread it before me, and it was written within and without. And there were written therein lamentations and mournings and woe." Now, Ezekiel is told to speak these things. He's told to digest the words that I give to you and make this message known, but make it known to a very rebellious people. But even though the people won't listen, don't you be rebellious. You do what I tell you to do. You speak these words to these people and tell them the why all of this has come upon them. Now, perhaps it would be wise for us to preface our study just a little bit with some Old Testament passages that go way back and precede Ezekiel. For example, turn back in your Bible to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. You'll note that as Moses is the writer, he's telling the children of Israel, the 12 tribes at this time, what would come to pass if they worship idols. Now keep in mind the time in which Moses is writing. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, this is during the time just after they come out of Egypt, in the time of the wilderness. And in verse 25 of Deuteronomy 4, Moses told them, "When thou shalt beget children, and children's children, and ye shall have been long in the land, and shall corrupt yourselves, and make a graven image in the form of anything, and shall do that which is evil in the sight of Jehovah thy God, to provoke him to anger, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that ye shall soon utterly perish from off the land, whereunto ye go over the Jordan to possess it. Ye shall not prolong your days upon it, but shall utterly be destroyed. And Jehovah will scatter you among the peoples, and ye shall be left few in number among the nations, whether Jehovah shall lead you away." Now put that on the timeline. We're way back here just after the giving of the law of Moses unto the people. And if you turn forward just a little bit to Deuteronomy chapter 8, again, almost the same place on the timeline, just shortly after, in verse 18 of Deuteronomy chapter 8, Moses said, "But thou shalt remember Jehovah thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers as at this day. And it shall be, if thou shalt forget Jehovah thy God, and walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall utterly perish, as the nations that Jehovah maketh to perish before you, so shall ye perish, because you would not hearken unto the voice of Jehovah your God." You wouldn't listen. Now, that's twice that Moses has told them, but that's not all. As you turn in your Bible further in the book of Deuteronomy, and you can read Deuteronomy chapter 28 through 30, where Moses tells them in great detail, yet again, what's going to happen to them, not if, but when they worship idols. And particularly, if you'll notice in Deuteronomy 30, he says, "And it shall come to pass," verse 1, "when all these things are come upon thee, the blessing and the curse which I have set before thee, and thou shalt call them to mind among all the nations, whether Jehovah thy God hath driven thee, and shalt return unto Jehovah thy God, and shalt obey his voice according to all that I command thee this day, thou and thy children, with all thy heart and with all thy soul, that then Jehovah thy God will turn thy captivity." He's going to bring you back from these nations. Now I want you to underscore in your thinking the expression "when" and "then," because this is stated of a certainty. It's not if anymore. This is what you're going to do. Now I want you to note again on the timeline, it's Moses that said this. They're not in the land yet. The land that God had promised unto Abraham, they're not there yet. But we know that Joshua is the one that leads them into the promised land. And as you turn in your Bible to Joshua chapter 11 and read beginning in verse 23 of Joshua chapter 11, it says, "So Joshua took the whole land according to all that Jehovah spake unto Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel according to their divisions by their tribes, and the land had rest from war." Now what we learn in that passage is Joshua has led them according to the instruction of Joshua chapter 1 into the land. And now it's their land. Now what's lacking yet is to divide the land among the tribes. And that's what you see in the remaining chapters of the book of Joshua. And when you come over to Joshua chapter 21, verse 43, you'll note that God gave them all the land which he sware unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein, and not one thing failed. Now that's Joshua, just a little bit after the time of Moses. Now, when you look at Joshua chapter 23 in verses 14 through the end of the chapter, note that passage. Joshua is about to die. He's old. And the text tells us that not one thing has failed, verse 14, "of all the good things which Jehovah your God spake concerning you all are come to pass, not one thing hath failed." But then in verse 16, he said, "When you transgress the covenant of Jehovah your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down yourselves to them, then will the anger of Jehovah be kindled against you, and ye shall perish quickly from off the good land which he hath given unto you." You see, Joshua's telling them just exactly the same thing Moses said, isn't he? Just exactly the same thing. When you do this, is what God's going to do. Now, there were prophets that were sent, multiple prophets that were sent, even after the kingdom divided, to call upon the northern 10 tribes who did not have a single good king. Every one of them served and worshipped idols. Every one of them. So then it was inevitable that a kingdom would arise and would take them into captivity. Isaiah was one of the prophets that talked to them about that. And you'll note in Isaiah chapter 10, beginning in verse 5, Isaiah named the kingdom of Assyria, that God would raise up and take those folks captive. And that's exactly what happened. But by the time we're reading over here in the book of Ezekiel, that's already happened. And we're still now down the timeline about 135 years. Now, wouldn't you like to think that if you could read in your Old Testament these passages that you attribute to Moses, say he said that, Joshua said this, Isaiah said this, and we look to the north and we see that Samaria fell, just like God said, taken into captivity in the year 722 B.C., just like God said, just exactly. Wouldn't you like to think that you could look at your history and not do the same thing? Wouldn't you like to think that? But now here's Ezekiel. We know that there were some that were faithful, including Ezekiel, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But they're in captivity now. Because the southern kingdom of Judah, consisting of Judah and Benjamin, done exactly the same thing the northern tribes did. And now God has raised up King Nebuchadnezzar. Of course, that's addressed extensively in the book of Daniel, chapter 2 specifically. And we note that King Nebuchadnezzar took the southern two tribes into captivity. And now God calls upon Ezekiel, I want you to write these things down, rebuke these people. Help them to see why they are where they are. Now that sets a backdrop for us to study from tonight about where Ezekiel is in this equation, the time frame, and all of that. But in order to see the effectiveness of that, I want us to look at an Old Testament proverb, chapter 14, verse 34. In that proverb, we learn that righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. Now let it be observed that we're not just talking now at this point about the application of this principle to the northern 10 tribes of Israel. We're not just talking about the application of this principle to the southern two tribes of Benjamin and Judah. For we find that warnings were given to the city of Nineveh. Remember, that's what Jonah went to tell them about. Remember, that's what Nahum, the Old Testament prophet, wrote about the fall of the Assyrians and the capital city of Nineveh. And remember also that Old Testament books address the fall like Obadiah, the fall of the kingdom of Edom, the Edomites. And so we're looking at the fall of nations that illustrate the principle that righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. You mean even the people of God? That's right. Even the people of God. Now during this time, Ezekiel is writing, time of captivity. He's writing them to tell them what's happened to them and why. Now, you've read Ezekiel chapter 6 and 7, and I would dare say that as you read over that, you notice that the language is quite graphic. And the fall that Ezekiel is talking about is quite graphic. And as you read through those chapters, you'll find something like this in Ezekiel chapter 7, verse 11. Violence has risen up unto a rod of wickedness. None of them shall remain, nor of their multitude, nor of their wealth, neither shall there be eminency among them. I want to underscore the expression that I've tried to highlight. Violence is risen up into a rod of wickedness. Now, there are some commentators I disagree with on this passage. They think that the violence that has risen up was perhaps describing the Assyrians or perhaps describing the Babylonians. I don't believe that's the case at all. I think the violence is from within. He's talking about what these people have become. Violence has risen up within you. And consequently, here's the judgment that God has pronounced upon you. There's not going to be anything to survive. In Ezekiel chapter 7, verse 23, the prophet is told to make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes and the city is full of violence. What city is he talking about? Well, he's talking about Jerusalem. Here's the circumstances that have existed in the city of Jerusalem. This is why you've been taken into captivity. The city's full of violence. There are bloody crimes that lay on every hand. And so this is why you have been taken into captivity. In chapter 8, he said, then he said unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence. Who has? the inhabitants of the land of Judah. We're talking about the people of God, aren't we? We're talking about the people that have descended from Abraham, the people of God. They have filled the land with violence and have turned again unto me to provoke me to anger, and lo, they put forth the branch in their nose. Now, the idea of putting a branch in your nose, put a stick in your nose, you know what the purpose of that is? So you can be led around. Now, that's what was going to happen to them. That's what happened when the king of Babylon took them into captivity. Now, that sounds pretty grim, doesn't it? But what we want to see is Ezekiel's just telling them like it is. There's violence in the land. Now, the Lord said that as a result of this violence, here's what happened. He said, now is the end upon thee, in reference to these people and their punishment. This is it. The judgment of God's come upon you. Furthermore, we know that it's described in Ezekiel chapter 7 and verse 7 as a day of tumult. This is a time of trouble for you because you did the very thing that I told you not to do. You worshipped idols. Well, how long have they been told not to do this? Well, all the way back to the time of Moses and before. Don't do this. But that's what they did. And they watched their neighbors to the north do the very same thing and suffer the consequences at the hand of Assyria. And now here they are. It was a day when God's sinful people would loathe themselves in their own sight for the evils which they have committed, Ezekiel said. Now the idea of loathing yourself is to look upon yourself and just despise yourself for what you've done. And here they are in a foreign land because they have worshipped idols. They've done everything from A to Z that would be practiced in worship to idols. And now they look back and they've got to endure this, because this is the punishment that God inflicted upon them. And He told them it was coming long before they ever possessed the land. And now look where they are. And you'll also note that it's described in Ezekiel 7 verse 8 as the day of God's anger and wrath. It's described also in Ezekiel 7 in verse 18 as the day of horror and shame. Now, are we getting the picture of what Ezekiel's writing about? The people have not done right. And what is it to us to suppose that they might expect to have no consequence for what they've done? Why would they suspect that God would not do what He said? Why would they even have the idea that violence could fill the land and there just wouldn't be any consequence? Where'd that idea come from? Well, you remember in Jeremiah chapter 5, verses 31 and 32, where that Old Testament prophet said that the prophets prophesy falsely and the priest, well, their word is for hire. They bear rule by their means. And then he continues and said, my people love to have it so. And you'll notice Jeremiah continues on that in the 6th chapter, verses 10 through verse 16. The prophets would say to the people, peace, peace, when there is no peace. In Jeremiah 23, again, he said, these prophets say peace, peace, when there is no peace. In Jeremiah 23, he said that these prophets would say, go ahead and do what you want to because no evil is going to come upon you. Now, what are they saying except to say, there's no consequence. You do as you please. There's no consequence. Now, do you see why there was violence in the land? They were doing as they pleased. And they thought there was not going to be any consequence. And now in the land of captivity, Ezekiel is writing about why you're here. Now, how many of you who are grown up now remember the day when you did something that your parents told you not to do? You remember that day. And you remember your parents setting you down and telling you, I told you not to do that. I told you not to do that. And I told you just exactly what the consequence would be if you did. Now, if you were like I was, you might say, well, why don't you just go ahead and whip me and let's get it over with? Yeah. But you see, it's that long speech of why you're getting this that you really don't want to hear, but you've got to hear it. Now, Ezekiel's telling them why you're getting this. He's being plain about the righteous judgment of God. Now, you see why it was a day of God's anger, a day of God's wrath, a day of horror and shame. Because now they're in captivity. They're in a strange land. And there are those who are casting stones at them, insult, by saying to them, why don't you sing the songs of praise here that you sang in your ascent to the temple? And they explain that we can't sing the songs of praise in a foreign land. Well, why? Because we know why we're here. We didn't praise God when we were home, and now we're here. There were a number of years ago, since I've lived here, that I was studying with a fellow, talking with him, who was a prison guard, a correctional officer up here in Tehachapi. He had a rather interesting job. It really was intriguing to me. He said, my job is to prepare new inmates for prison life. How'd you like that job? And he said, the speech that I give them all is essentially the same. Get in a group of young fellows that done wrong, and now they're in prison. They're going to be here for a while. He says, I start out by telling them that you didn't listen to your mama and daddy. You got in trouble. You went to school and you didn't listen to your teachers. You didn't listen to the principal. And you got in trouble. You got out in society and you didn't listen to the laws. You did as you pleased. You transgressed the law. And he said, now you're here and you will listen to me. I would suggest to you, my friend, that would be a sobering speech. Because now you're suffering the consequences because you didn't listen before. And that's what the message of Ezekiel essentially is. He's telling them why he has to tell them these things. He tells them in Ezekiel chapter 3 and Ezekiel chapter 33 that I am a watchman. God called him that, a watchman. And he was responsible for teaching those people, calling upon them to repent of the things that they did. And if he didn't do it, it would be required of him. Now we see the importance of what he's saying to them. So here's what he's telling them in these two chapters. And I've just got it abbreviated a little bit on the board. Hopefully that it will intrigue your interest and cause you to study further the things that this Old Testament prophet had to say to them. Because the fact that we are reading this is helpful to us to see that God always does what he says he will do. He never one time falters, not a time. Now, when you look in your Bible, in Ezekiel chapter 6, beginning in verse 1 through verse 7. Now, I know that all of you have read this, right? This afternoon. Well, maybe we better look at it. Ezekiel chapter 6, look at verse 1. And the word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face toward the mountains of Israel and prophesy unto them. And say, ye mountains of Israel, hear the word of Jehovah, the Lord, or hear the word of the Lord, Jehovah, thus saith the Lord Jehovah to the mountains and to the hills, to the watercourses and to the valleys. Behold, I will bring a sword upon you, and I will destroy your high places. And your altars shall become desolate, and your sun images shall be broken. And I will cast down your slain men before your idols, and I will lay the dead bodies of the children of Israel before their idols. And I will scatter your bones round about your altars, and all your dwelling places, the cities shall be laid waste, and the high places shall be desolate, and your altars may be laid waste and made desolate, and your idols may be broken to and cease, and your sun images may be hewn down, and your works may be abolished, and the slain shall fall in the midst of you, and ye shall know that I am Jehovah. Ye shall know that I am the Lord, if you're reading from the King James translation. Now I want you to look at that. You see, he's telling them very pointedly the result or the consequence of their worshiping idols. Here's what's happened. And here's why. And why? What effect is that to have on you? That ye may know that I am the Lord. Now where are they? They're in a foreign land. They're in captivity. They're in Babylon. Now the prophet is instructed to set his face toward the mountains of Israel. Well, Israel way down here. You set your face toward the mountains of Israel. And you say this. You prophesy unto them. And you tell them that this is the circumstance that you're in. And why? Is that sobering? Now that's what he's talking about, Jerusalem. You set your face toward Jerusalem so that you can know that I am the Lord. Now that expression, so that you can know that I am the Lord, that occurs 63 times in the book of Ezekiel. And I would call it to your attention that that's not necessarily for the Babylonians, not necessarily for the Assyrians, not necessarily for the Edomites. This is for the people of God, that you might know that I am God. Now why did they need to know that? Because they were the ones that were charged to worship God, and they're worshiping idols. That's why they're in captivity. You see, how would they know that Jehovah, He is God? By having it called to their attention that God always does just exactly what He said He would do, and that's why you're here. Isn't that simple? And you think they finally would get the lesson? Well, you'd like to think so. You'll notice in the text of chapter 6, beginning in verse 8, Ezekiel chapter 6, verse 8, "Yet will I leave a remnant, in that ye shall have some that escape the sword among the nations, when ye shall be scattered through the countries. And those of you that escape shall remember me among the nations, whether they shall be carried captive, how that I have been broken with their lewd heart, which hath departed from me, and with their eyes, which play the harlot after the idols. And they shall loathe themselves in their own sight for the evils which they have committed and all their abominations. And they shall know that I am Jehovah. I have not said in vain that I would do this evil unto them." You see, even the remnant would know. They would know that I am Jehovah. A remnant that would be spared. Now we know what a remnant is. I go with Donna every once in a rare great while to the material store. Sometimes she buys something off the remnant table. That's the leftover people. There'd be a leftover portion of the people of God that would return to the land, just like Moses said, you recall, in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 1 through 10. Now, somebody want to fuss that this is not fair. Not fair that we'd be taken into captivity. Look, if you will, in verse 11 of chapter 6. "Thus saith Jehovah, the Lord Jehovah, smite with thy hand and stamp with thy foot, and say, alas, because of all the evil abominations of the house of Israel, for they shall fall by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence. He that is far off shall die of the pestilence, and he that is near shall fall by the sword. And he that remaineth and is besieged shall die by the famine. Thus will I accomplish my wrath upon them, and ye shall know that I am Jehovah. When their slain men shall be among their idols, round about their altars, upon every high hill, and on all the tops of the mountains, and under every green tree, and under every thick oak, and the places where they offered sweet savor to their idols. And I will stretch out my hand upon them, and make the land desolate and waste, from the wilderness toward Diblah, throughout all their inhabitants, that they may know that I am Jehovah." Now, you say, wait a minute, it's not fair. No, it is fair. It's right. It's just, because you did the very thing that I told you not to do. Now, do you see that in these verses? No, you can't cry, it's not fair, because I told you this is what was going to happen. So you smite the hand and you stamp the foot. This is the way it is. Punishment's just. Now, what else do we learn? Well, we learn the certainty of this coming to pass. In the seventh chapter of the book of Ezekiel, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Moreover, the word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, And thou, son of man, thus saith the Lord Jehovah unto the land of Israel, the end is come upon the four corners of the land. Now is the end upon thee, and I will send mine anger upon thee, and will judge thee according to thy ways. And I will bring upon thee all thine abominations, and mine eye shall not spare thee, neither will I have pity, but I will bring thy ways upon thee, and thine abominations shall be in the midst of thee, and ye shall know that I am Jehovah." Let me ask you, brethren, when you read these words, is that sobering to you? He's telling them just exactly what's going to happen. Read on in verse 5. "Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, an evil, only an evil, behold, it cometh. An end is come. The end is come. It awaketh against thee. Behold, it cometh. Thy doom is come unto the land, O inhabitant of the land. The time is come. The day is near. A day of tumult, and not of joyful shouting upon the mountains." Now will I shortly pour out my wrath upon thee and accomplish mine anger against thee and will judge thee according to thy ways, and I will bring upon thee all thine abominations, and mine eyes shall not spare. Neither will I have pity. I will bring upon thee according to thy ways, and thine abominations shall be in the midst of thee, and ye shall know that I am Jehovah. Now you look at that, brethren. That sounds serious, doesn't it? Now when your daddy took you out and took off his belt and was about to tear you up and gave you that long, lengthy speech that you dreaded so much, and you said, well, why don't we just get it over with? You didn't just get it over with, did you? No, it wasn't over with. But your daddy did just exactly what he told you he would do, didn't he? Now, what benefit was that to you? I want you to note in the text, do you ever cry for pity? Oh, but Dad, I didn't aim to. Oh, that don't make any difference. But Dad, it's not fair. No, that don't make any difference either. I told you not to do it, and you did it. End of story. Isn't that right? Any of you besides me ever been there? Yeah. Know that feeling well, don't we? Know how that is. Yes, sir. Now, that's what Ezekiel's telling. He said, I'm going to shortly pour out my wrath upon you. I'm not going to have any pity on you at all. Not going to be any mercy. Because I told you. And I told you multiple times and you didn't listen. And now it's time to pay the piper. Now, that's what the prophet's telling them. In order that you might know who I am. I'm God. Now, he meant what he said. The end comes. Now, what was the implications of that? I want you to notice this chart, just in brief. We'll not elaborate extensively upon it. But I want you to note, beginning in verse 10 of Ezekiel chapter 7. He said, behold, the day cometh, it cometh. Thy doom is gone forth. The rod hath blossomed. Pride hath budded. Violence is risen up into a rod of wickedness. None of them shall remain, nor of their multitude, nor of their wealth, neither shall there be eminency among them. The time is come, the day draweth near. Let not the buyer rejoice, nor the seller mourn, for wrath is upon all the multitude thereof. For the seller shall not return to that which is sold, although they be yet alive. For the vision is touching the whole multitude thereof. None shall return, neither shall any strengthen himself in the iniquity of his life. What's he talking about? Well, the buying and selling, that's going to stop. You know why it's going to stop? Because you're going to be captives in a foreign land. Not going to have any buying and selling going on. Now, what would that do to a nation? Well, you don't have any social interaction. And you'll notice in chapter 7, verse 19, we'll get to it in just a moment, it would disrupt the economy of the nation. And all these things, when you talk about the social element, the military element, the economic and political disruptions, that destroys the nation, doesn't it? That just pretty much shoots a hole in it. And that's what happened to Judah when they were taken into captivity by the kingdom of Babylon. In verses 14 through verse 18, he said, they have blown the trumpet, they have made all ready, but none goeth to battle. For my wrath is upon the multitude thereof. The sword is without, the pestilence and the famine within. And he that is in the fields shall die with the sword, and he that's in the city, famine and pestilence shall devour him. But those of them that escape shall escape, and shall be on the mountains like doves of the valley, all of them moaning, everyone in his iniquity. All the hands shall be feeble, and all the knees shall be weak as water. And they shall also gird themselves with sackcloth, and horror shall cover them, and shame shall be upon all the faces, and baldness upon their heads. Well, that's not a very pretty sight. You mean we blow the trumpet, and there's not going to be anybody to answer the call? Well, that's right. You won't have any military to save you. If you're outside the city, you'll die by the sword. If you're inside the city, you'll die as a result of pestilence and famine. Now, the analogy to be made there is most of the cities, including the city of Jerusalem, was a walled city. And often opposing armies, in order to conquer a city that had a wall on it, did what just almost every nation does that's trying to conquer a city that has any kind of defensive wall. You just put your military around them so there's no going in, no going out. And what happens? Well, they starve to death. Now, if you want to hasten that, what do you do? What did they sometimes do? they would catapult on what they called a machine. They would catapult a dead, infected body over the wall into the city. Now, what does that do? That spreads disease among the people. So if you don't have any food and you've got injected into the city disease, what's going to happen to those that are inside the city that can't get out? Well, they're going to die. Well, what about those that are outside the city and they try to fight their way out? Well, they've got an army that's encompassed the city and they're going to beat you up with their swords. So there you go. Now, does that present a pretty picture? How's their army going to say? They're not going to have any army. Not going to be anybody to answer the trumpet call. Now read on in verse 19. The text tells us, "And they shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be as an unclean thing. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of Jehovah. They shall not satisfy their souls, neither fill their bowels, because it hath been a stumbling block of their iniquity. As for the beauty of his ornament, he set it in majesty, but they made the images of their abominations and their detestable things therein. Therefore have I made it unto them as an unclean thing, and I will give it unto the hands of the strangers for a prey, and to the wicked in the earth for a spoil, and they shall profane it. He said, my face will I turn away from them. And they shall profane my secret place, and robbers shall enter into it and profane it." What are we reading in these verses? Now, what was it that Israel had historically done when an enemy would arise? Well, they'd go down to Egypt with their silver and gold and try to buy an army. But would they have anybody that would be influenced by their silver and gold when Nebuchadnezzar came upon them? You see, Nebuchadnezzar was conquering everybody else too. They had enough of their own problem. They're not going to help you. You don't have enough money to buy any kind of help. So your silver and your gold is going to be worthless. Not going to help you. You can't buy some mercenaries to fight your way out of this. You're going to be in the city or outside the city. Either way, you're going to die. Now, is that graphic for us to see the point that the prophet is making? So, your silver and gold not going to be any value to you. Well, what about the politics of the city? He said, make a chain. For the land is full of bloody crimes and the city full of violence. Therefore will I bring the worst of the nations, and they shall possess their houses. And I also will make the pride of the strong to cease, and their holy places shall be profaned. Destruction cometh, and they shall seek peace, and there shall be none. He said, mischief shall come upon mischief, and rumor shall be upon rumor, and they shall seek a vision of the prophet, but the law shall perish from the priest and the council from the elders. Now let's pause there. You see, the point is that destruction is coming, and I'm going to bring upon you the worst of the worst. Now you remember the book of Habakkuk? When Habakkuk was looking at the people of Judah, the southern two kingdoms of Judah and Benjamin, and he saw what they were doing, and his concern to the Lord was, how long are you going to let this go on? And God told Habakkuk, I'm going to tell you the answer to your question, but you won't believe it. And when he told him, I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans, Habakkuk's response to that was, how can you use them? They're worse than we are. Well, they are. You see, they're described here as the worst of the nations. And that's who God was going to use as an instrument of his wrath to punish the southern kingdom of Judah and take them away into captivity. Now you'll notice in verse 26, he said, mischief shall come upon mischief, and rumor shall be upon rumor, and they shall seek a vision from the prophet. You see, they're going to want to know, they're going to hear all these things, the people of Judah are, and they're going to want to know what's the right and the wrong of it, and they're going to seek a prophet to tell them. And you know what they're going to find? Nothing. They're not going to find anybody to tell them. Now, does that sound familiar to us? Ezekiel's not talking about the United States, I just have you know that. But he's talking about this principle of what Judah did. They worshiped idols. And because they worshiped idols and they abandoned the knowledge of God, as we were talking about in our study this morning, now there's the consequences that have to be paid. And they're going to seek help, but there's not going to be any help. Not going to be any help. The prophet Jeremiah told them this is going to go on for 70 years. How long are you going to have to do this? 70 years. And we'd call that a generation, wouldn't we? 70 long years. You're going to endure this. Now, You're going to have social disruption, military disruption. The economy's going to go south. The politics not going to help you. Not anybody going to give you any answers you're looking for. And so the Lord would have no pity. Day of judgment come upon this nation. He wouldn't spare the wicked in the day of punishment. And we see this in both Old and New Testament times. The wicked would be punished. Now, what can we learn from this? We're reading about a very specific time in the history of Israel. The history of Judah specifically that's being addressed here. And multiple times we've noticed this expression, ye shall know that I am the Lord. Now, I think it's important, as many times as Ezekiel states that, that we see clearly what he's saying to them. Not necessarily that you as the kingdom of Judah will know that I am the Lord. And not necessarily every single individual would understand that. But you see, from our perspective in history, and should be true of their perspective in history, can we not look back and see who God is? Can we not look back and see God rules among the kingdoms of men? Well, even old Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylonian Empire, he had to learn that. He had to learn it the hard way, that God rules in the kingdoms of men. Now, what can we do about that? Well, we're told to pray for those who are leaders. 1 Timothy chapter 2. To pray for those who are in positions of power. And this was the problem that Habakkuk had. He didn't understand how God's plan would play out, but what he did learn was he had to trust the Lord. That's just the way of it. And we read this morning from Romans chapter 1, verses 18 and following, that those who reject the knowledge of God become the subjects of God's wrath, because God always rules, even in the kingdoms of men. Yeah, that's right. Now, these maps you've seen before, but I want you to see them again. I use them frequently, both here and away, because I think the maps themselves tell a very vivid story, in particular regarding the period of time that we're studying of Ezekiel's day. Here is depicted on this map the divided kingdom in the day of Jeroboam, king of Israel, and Uzziah, who was king in Judah. This takes us back to just the time after the division of the kingdom. And what do we find during this time? Well, we've got Israel up here to the north, consisting of 10 tribes, Judah and Benjamin down here to the south. Now, you remember that God had threatened the empire of Assyria? We saw that in Isaiah 10, beginning in verse 5, that Assyria is going to be the rod of mine anger. But we see that during the time of King Hezekiah, who was ruling in Jerusalem, they were serving the Lord, faithful to God. And this takes us, Richard, back to 2 Kings 19, 18 and 19, 17, 18 and 19, where we read of the fall of the northern 10 tribes and the threat of the king of Assyria against Jerusalem during the reign of King Hezekiah. King Hezekiah said, no, I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to surrender. And we note that God delivered the city of Jerusalem without ever firing a shot. And we saw how that the king's army of 185,000 of them, at least, as you say, woke up dead. And he went back to the city of Nineveh and left Jerusalem alone. But now what we see is on this chart, where is Jerusalem? Where is Judah? Well, we've got the location of the city, but it's not faithful to God, because now the Babylonian Empire has taken it over. Ezekiel's explaining all this, you see. Why are you in captivity? Well, look over here to Jerusalem and pronounce this judgment. Here's why you're in captivity. This is what you did. Now, to the kingdom of Babylon, we know that the Medes and the Persians conquered that. Now, who brought all of that to pass? Who brought it to pass? Well, God did. Now, when we look back in history and we read what the Old Testament prophet Ezekiel said, that ye may know that Jehovah is God. He's Lord. You need to know that. Now, all of us need to know that. Can not the whole world look back at history and see that? Now, the lesson that we want to remember is that which we started out with. Righteousness exalteth the nation. But sin, well, it's an abomination to any people. Now, when we look at our world, can we learn anything from history? When we look at our society, can we learn anything from history? You see, as we were talking about in the lesson this morning, I don't believe, frankly, that the answer is some kind of political position. It's not. The answer to some of our societal problems is to change the thinking of some of the folks that make up our society. And we do that as we teach the gospel to each one. You see, that was the problem during the days of Ezekiel, wasn't it? That's what brought them to that point. They wouldn't listen to God. Now, how can you have a successful nation, a successful society, when you don't believe that there is a God and you don't believe that the Bible is His Word? Well, you see, sin is a reproach to any people. Has that changed? Now, the answer then is to preach the gospel to folks, but first of all, set the example that you may know that Jehovah, He is God. That's our study. You've listened very kindly and patiently to the things that I wanted to talk with you about from this brief text. And hopefully maybe the lesson will help us some. But perhaps I'm talking to somebody this morning, this evening, whatever time it is, that is not a Christian. And it's your desire to obey the gospel. Some are not. You need to think about these things. Because that's the principle that we're dealing with. If you're not a Christian, you need to obey the gospel because sin will cost you. It always has, always will cost you your soul. But God sent His Son to die for you so that you can have life. You need to believe that that's so. Cease a practice of sin. Confess your faith and be baptized for the remission of your sins. If you'd be willing to do that, everything's ready. We'll try to help you. Maybe you've obeyed the gospel. And like Israel of old, Judah of old, they were faithful for a while, but they didn't stay. And when they began to worship idols, the consequences ensued. Sin always does. As consequences, they always come. But you can avoid the eternal consequences if you get back on course. If we can help you do that, praying with you and for you, that's our desire. If you'd make that known, while together we stand and sing a song.